Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
And welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. Sorry for that little technical difficulty there. My name is Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist. And this show explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Monday evening at 8 p.m. on KX93.5, your local independent radio. I do want to let you guys know that this week we are celebrating and really hoping to gain a lot of your support with our KX Takeover, which is our huge fundraising event this week, allowing over 50 locals to come onto the air and have their own show for an hour and just, you know, talk about music and what they love and their passions, in hopes that you will listen to that content and value what we're doing and really just come down and support us financially and at events and wherever you can. We really, truly do need your support for the station to offer what it does to our community with regard to businesses and nonprofit and to artists of all types. So please tune in this week. If you hear a little bit of a different format, that is because you are hearing guest DJs all week. Okay, so on to tonight's show. We are going to be talking about true love of yourself. What does it look like to really love yourself? Now, I feel like we say this all the time. Hey, man, you just need to love yourself more. What does that really mean? And I'm a big believer that loving yourself is about doing. It is not just about looking in the mirror and having positive affirmations, which can be incredibly helpful, you know, leaving yourself sticky notes. Hey, you're awesome. You got this, whatever. But I do believe we have to take action. We have to believe and engage in our lives in certain ways that demonstrate that we do value ourselves, because that's really what self-love is. It is saying, I matter, and I matter enough to do something about it. So I'm just going to offer you some tips here. Maybe we'll take a little break in between and come back, because it will be a little more talking than my last few several weeks where I've had a lot of amazing psychologists and therapists and guests on. And I'll return back to that too. But I had heard some, hey, where are you, Dr. Sage, and all that? So I just wanted to share a topic that I'm very passionate about, which is really loving ourselves more and owning our power. I think it's one of the greatest struggles of the human race, especially in a culture that tells us all the time that we're not worthy, we're not good enough, and we'll never be enough, which is not true. Okay, so let's get into it. So the first thing to really begin to have true love for yourself is to really look at knowing yourself. And the way we do this, I think, is to really try to connect to who are we and who were we before it really mattered? You know, what did you do in your childhood that you did because it was fun, not because you were trying to get more followers or because you needed to impress your boss or you were trying to win someone's heart? But what did you do that spoke to who you were and who you are now and who you want to be? So did you play sports? Did you ride horses? Did you collect coins? That sounds really old-fashioned, but I think people still do that. What did you do? And really, I guess the next thing is, what are your strengths and what are your challenges? So see, I didn't say weaknesses. I said challenges, because there's always area and room to grow. So I'd say when you ask yourself, how do I know myself and what do I know about myself? What we're trying to discover is, what do I care about? What am I passionate about? What am I good at? What do I need to be a little more honest with myself about that maybe it's not really a strong point for me? And do I want to become better at this, or am I okay with just letting it be what it is? So getting to know yourself and really discovering who you are. And that includes your personality, you know, your temperament. Are you more laid back? Are you more intense? Because the greater knowledge you have about yourself, the greater ability you will have to share it with someone else and to foster a deeper sense of meaning and purpose and self-love. All right, the next one is really about that word, which I know we hear it's so overused, but incredibly important, is this idea of boundaries. And really, it just means, you know, deciding where do I end and you begin. That's really what it is. And interpersonal boundaries really just define what is acceptable or can be tolerated in a relationship. And these can really vary by person to person based on our individual values and beliefs, identities, likes and dislikes, kind of like where we're comfortable and where we're not so comfortable. And even, you know, these can be shaped by our past experiences. So healthy boundaries, what they really do is they enable us to be what they call an active participant in our own lives, meaning we are mindfully and presently aware of what we're doing, rather than just being passive recipients or being a martyr or always sort of, you know, cowering to other people's demands and whims. We are really saying that where I begin and where I end and where you can come and go in those areas matters. It is a part of loving yourself is knowing what are your boundaries. So I'm going to go over some, you know, here was a great way I found to describe boundaries. So there are really several types of boundaries. The first one is what we call healthy boundaries. What just makes sense, right? So what are healthy boundaries look like? In a healthy boundary system, we are valuing our own opinion. We're not compromising our values or beliefs for other people. And we appropriately share personal information. This is that thing where you don't vomit all your stuff on someone you don't know very well, that you're mindful of who am I talking to? What am I talking about? But you're also not blocking your true self and your vulnerability. So this is really a balancing act. And I can talk more about that later, but it's really important that you're aware of what you're sharing. And because if you're oversharing with me, that's a boundary issue. Maybe I don't want to hear about your divorce or your medical procedure if I don't know you very well. Maybe I'm not the best person to seek support from. Now, because I'm a psychologist, I would hope I would be a good person for that. But I'm just talking about out in the world, we never know. So we do want to be mindful of that. And we also want to be accepting of others when they are saying no or setting their boundaries with us. So if someone says, hey, you know, I don't really want to talk about that, even in a session, that's a place where we say, okay, and we respect that. And certainly out in the world, it's the same way. So, you know, not pushing to the point where you're just trying to get your needs met. Now, the next type of boundary is a rigid boundary. And you know these people. These are the people who are just super hardcore about what they'll accept and what they won't. And they're not very flexible. And because they're so rigid and because everything has to be a certain way, they often avoid intimacy and close relationships. They can be people who really have a hard time asking for help. They have few close relationships. They may seem detached at times, and they might often distance themselves from you to avoid rejection. So it might be, I'm going to leave you first, so you can't leave me because I have no space to tolerate it. Tolerate it, meaning the emotion and the emotional world that may follow. And so I need to keep things really sort of black and white. And we all know that the majority of things in life are not black and white. I think we live, you know, in a gray area most of the time. The last one of a boundary description is called porous. You have porous boundaries if you, one, overshare personal information, have difficulty saying no to the requests of others, if you get over-involved, if you're just a total busybody in other people's business, or if you tolerate abuse or disrespect. So you might think about, where in my life do I have healthy boundaries? Where am I maybe a little rigid? And where am I porous? And where do I want to perhaps modify the rigidity and the porous parts of my boundaries? So it's really important to keep in mind that the appropriateness of a boundary really depends on the setting and where you are and who you're with. So while it might be appropriate boundaries when you're with your friends to share certain things, it might not be appropriate to share those same issues or stories with your coworkers or your colleagues. And obviously, different cultures have very different, at times, expectations of boundaries. And so you want to be mindful of that. And if you don't know, I think it's better to err on the side of being careful than to just assume that someone else's boundaries are similar to yours. Now, my biggest word for you, if you want to know about a boundary issue in your life with people, is to ask yourself where you feel resentment. Because I have found that resentment is the biggest detective of boundary issue, going on in your life, right? So if I'm not asking for what I need, let's say for my kids, and I come in the front door and I'm not holding them accountable with, let's say, their chores, and I'm tired, I'm going to come in the door, and if it's a mess, I'm going to be resentful a little bit, maybe, and a little frustrated. But it's because I didn't hold the boundary and expectation. Most likely, I didn't do a good job of that. And so, or it's in a relationship, and I'm kind of resentful of what you're doing to me, but I haven't ever really asked you to stop, or I haven't really made it an issue. And so that resentment then gets acted out often in anger or passive aggressiveness, when it's really about something we need to talk about, where we're saying, you know what, this is okay for me, and this isn't okay for me. So to have love for yourself, true love, you really have to look at your boundaries. Extremely important. Okay, the next one is a big one, and it is comparing ourselves to others, okay? And I think that we live in a culture where we are constantly doing that. We are looking at people on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, whatever it is. We're looking at their lives, and we're thinking, oh my gosh, everything about this person's life seems so much better or healthier or happier than mine. And I think that it has really become a detriment to our well-being. And we do know that research shows the longer you spend on social media, the higher your depression can go and the higher your anxiety. Because if you're not feeling perhaps maybe down about watching someone else's life, you also might feel a sense of angst or anxiousness or anxiety about, oh my gosh, this is what I have to do for myself. I have to change my life right now. And while we want to be motivated, that's not always a helpful strategy. So the first thing is to be mindful and become aware of your triggers. I know this is another overused word, but I actually love this word because I think it's just so meaningful. When I know what bothers me or what bothers you, then I can do something about it. So get over it. If you're sick of that word, I hate to tell you, it's not going anywhere. And it's actually a really important one, I think. All right. So start noticing, where are you triggered? What are the situations that tend to get you feeling negative about yourself, down on yourself, maybe overly competitive, maybe to sort of be, you know, what they say, pressing your nose against the glass and wishing it was you? Where do you start to feel just yucky about yourself? Where does that happen? When does it happen? Does it happen when you're looking at, you know, certain types of magazines or certain websites or certain Instagram accounts? Does it happen if you are in expensive neighborhoods, you know, and you're driving in your car and you just realize, gosh, no, this is probably something I'll never have. And because I don't have that, I'll probably never have the life I want. And just sort of it becomes this, you know, domino effect. And, you know, we have to drive places, obviously, and we have to drive past nice houses. I mean, if you live in Laguna, Newport Coast, Corona del Mar, right? There's always going to be someone that has more than you. And so whatever you have, to be honest. And so you really want to be mindful of that and see where your triggers are. And just remind yourself when that's happening so you can sort of name it and tame it, tame that part of yourself. You might want to also remind yourself that other people's outsides cannot be compared to your insides. And I think this is a really important idea because unless you're really close to someone, you can't use their outward appearance to judge the reality of their life. People really do curate their lives on social media and with their friends. I know a lot of people who, how are you? Good, fine. And they never tell you what's really going on. They have such a wall at maintaining this sense of it's all fine, it's all perfect, it's all beautiful. And I suppose if I wasn't a psychologist and I didn't sit with people and hear many people who are beautiful and successful in many different ways, whether it's talent or money or success or just as human beings, everyone is struggling with something and frankly, many things. And so you want to remember that you're making a comparison is not an equal comparison. And you really can't know what someone's life is like until you've walked in their shoes, and they can't know what yours is like. So trying to compare, I think, you know, we do it naturally, but it's really important to check yourself and remind yourself when you're doing that. Another one I've heard that can be helpful is saying, you know, and this has actually been proven to be true with research, money doesn't buy happiness and it never will. Now, here's the caveat to that. Of course, when you're under sort of the basic needs category, of course, money makes a difference. And I will argue that some money can make a difference. It's access, you know, whether it's access to therapy or to trips or time off. But at a certain point, I think it's somewhere around, I want to say $150,000 to $200,000 a year. Obviously, it depends on where you live. But generally speaking, once you have your basic needs met, you know, maybe a vacation once a year, the levels of happiness do not increase with the dollar signs behind your name. And so, yes, we do need a certain amount to live without, you know, a lot of chaos and stress. And the majority of us don't live that way. But it is important to remember that, you know, there are a lot of people that have a lot. And I know we see it all the time in the news and we hear about it. And I can promise you this is true. Everyone has their pain, their baggage, their wound that you may or might not know about. And so it's important to remember that. Okay, another great strategy for loving yourself and sort of being true to yourself is in terms of comparison is resist the idea that whatever you have is never going to be enough. You know, this idea that if I just had this one car, if I just had this one more thing, this is hard. I completely get it. And I'm not going to lie and say I don't understand this because I do feel that way too. We're humans. But I think it's important to try to be grateful. It's hard. I notice that when I'm going through phases of stress, these strategies I use, whether it's mindfulness or meditation or gratitude, they're often the first things that go. Because I think as humans, we get so stressed and overwhelmed, we forget to implement those strategies that actually help. But I would say things, you know, if this is sort of so Oprah 1990s, the gratitude journal, but it really, and I love Oprah, as everybody knows, but I really do think it makes a difference. And so literally if all you do is before you get out of bed, which let's face it, we wake up and most of us, the first thing we start doing before we've even hit the floor is we start thinking about all the things that we still need to do that we haven't done, that there are deficits, where we're behind. And I'd like to suggest to you that if you woke up and you just started thinking about three things that you're thankful for each day, and it can be like, I'm thankful that I have a meal this morning, that I have an avocado toast. Look what I did that. That was a Newport, Laguna Beach response. But let's look at like something that I'm grateful for. I'm going to have some joy. I have time for coffee this morning. I'm grateful for my children, for my job, for my friends, for my body, for my health. Even if you're not well, hopefully there's something you can find to be grateful for. And so if you can just start your day that way, you really do begin to set the tone because we definitely are wired for the negative. We are wired for what we don't have. So remembering to try to focus on just one good thing. Maybe you can just come up with one. Some days that's all we can muster. And frankly, some days we can't muster any things. I get it. So I think it's also important to be realistic. You know, there's no medal for coming up with gratitude every day, but the medal is really in the way your life goes when you do that. You can use comparison to motivate yourself. I think sometimes there's a little bit of it where you can say, okay, I think I want that. And I think that looks good for me. And so I'm going to use this person as an inspiration or this idea or this drive. It does motivate us. And so I don't think that all comparison is negative or bad. I think it's really what we do with it and how we use it. And so sometimes you have to really want something that you see someone else has to go after it. But you also have to be mindful of what you're going after and why and what you're seeking out of it. All right, the next one to be truly present in your life and full of self-love, at least on the path of self-love, is to what I just said, be present. to try to be more mindful and engaging of what's going on in your life and, you know, where you are and who you're with. What I've noticed is that we are all so often on devices. I was actually standing at the corner of Main Beach. I think it was a couple weekends ago when it first got nice outside. And I was waiting to cross the light and I was going for a walk, just a long walk toward the beach and through town. And I am not kidding you. Every single car, and it was a busy day, every car that went by, I saw the driver. And if there was a passenger, that person was looking down on their phone. And the people in the back seat were doing the same thing. And often I looked in an entire car full of people, at oftentimes three or four, and except for the driver, which occasionally was also looking down, they were looking down at their phones. Many of them weren't talking to each other. They certainly weren't having eye-to-eye contact, face-to-face contact. And I really believe we have to get off our devices and talk to people. So if your child comes in the room and you're on your phone, I know it's really hard. Either say, give me just a second and then get off and then make face-to-face contact. But don't try to, look, and I'm not going to say I never do that either, but we really have to push ourselves here. We are literally becoming so engaged with our electronics that, and this is nothing new, you guys know this, we are really truly missing out on real human relationships. And so also, if you are doing something and the person you're talking to, you realize you just spaced out and you sort of didn't really hear all that, it's okay to say, I'm sorry, can you tell me again? I really want to hear what you have to say. And my mind just went somewhere else for a second. I'd rather do that and own the fact that I spaced out for a minute than to act like I heard what they said, give them this sort of glazed over response, because we are wired for human connection and we know when someone is not listening to us. Their nonverbal communication is telling us that. Even if we don't really connect the dots in our core, we're like, you know what? That just didn't feel like, I don't feel like you're really seeing me. And so eye-to-eye contact, it's a huge thing. I would say for couples especially, you'd be surprised how many couples do not have any more than 20 minutes a day of face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact. They don't. And I can tell because when they come see me, they're both looking at me often and not at each other. And I can really see it in the couples who, when they're talking, if I'm asking them something, if they're not in chairs facing each other, they are looking at each other and glancing at me as opposed to just talking to me. And I understand why they're trying to give me information and things like that. So I'm talking about as time goes by in therapy. But I think it's really important. And I worry about our kids because if we're struggling to have face-to-face, eye-to-eye contact, this generation of the next generation of kids in terms of their adult relationships, we know we're all becoming more isolated and we're becoming more isolated in couples. So I think it's really important, if you don't model it with people you care about, even with your coworkers, we have no chance of it continuing. So that's an important one. Things like meditation, guided imagery, which I love, and all those apps like Calm and Headspace and Insight Timer, it is important. And you can learn and train your brain to become more mindful. And that actually changes the neurological pathways in your brain when you meditate. It really, truly does. So very important. The next piece I would say of true love of yourself is, and for yourself, is owning your own behavior. I think this is a huge one. And I don't think that many of us were taught how to do this. This is why you see little kids and they say, did you eat the cookie? And they go, no. And you know they're lying, right? We see all those super cute videos on social media. Because I think as human beings, we're wired not to want to get into trouble. But I think teaching our children and ourselves, it's never too late to learn how to take responsibility and accountability. And here's the difference between accountability and responsibility, okay? If you take responsibility for your own actions, you are showing accountability. Accountability is a noun that describes accepting responsibility, and it can be personal or very public. For example, a government has accountability for decisions and laws affecting citizens, and individuals have accountability for their acts and behaviors. So the point is, you need to own it, you know, and being defensive is not going to get you anywhere. That doesn't mean that you can't at times say, you know, I disagree. I really don't think that I showed up that way. But if your go-to is, I didn't eat the cookie, you're going to have a lot of issues in your life with other people. Your relationships are not going to be great because we all make mistakes. We all screw up. We all say things we shouldn't. We all do things. And sometimes we do them truly, honestly, with zero intention of hurting someone. In fact, I think many times that's the case, but it gets interpreted in another way. So it's okay to say, you know what? I really didn't mean to hurt you, but I hear that I did hurt you. Own it. And then make a repair. You know, that's a, I'm sorry I hurt you. What can I do to make it up to you? Or how can I, you know, improve next time? It's really important. So I would say own your behavior. And if you need to make a repair, make it as quickly as possible. This is especially true for couples and close relationships, but really it's true for everyone. Because the longer you let it slide without owning it, the more I make up a story in my head about what you did or why you did it, and the more my resentment grows, and the harder it is for us to be more forgiving of one another when and if a repair attempt is made. So own it, repair it. Huge. It's okay. No one's perfect. I'm going to get to that in a minute. You can own your behavior. All right. This is a big one too. Let yourself off the hooks. Let yourself off the hook for mistakes you made, like that one I just made, which I'll be listening to later and thinking, what was I doing with that one? It's really important to be forgiving of your mistakes. And I think what sets us up for this is become this very toxic belief that has been around for a very long time that we need to be perfect, that we have to be perfect, and anything less than that is not acceptable. I cannot tell you how many kids I see in my practice who tell me that they have to be perfect. And they really do believe this. And it's, you know, when I try to challenge that, they sort of look at me like, what are you talking about? You know, there's not always a right and wrong way and a perfect way to do things. So let me just give you some information about how perfectionism affects your overall health and why it's such a huge issue. Okay. So all those of you out there who say you have OCD, has to everything be a certain way, with all due respect to OCD, perfectionism is a little bit different. It's actually very different. So, but that's what people say. So we really want to talk about that another day. But I want you to know that being perfect can be very toxic. Okay. All right. Perfectionism can severely impact our mental health. And I'm going to tell you about some studies that prove that. So in a study conducted by a lecturer at the Department for Health in the United Kingdom, the authors explain that socially prescribed perfectionism is the most debilitating of many forms of perfectionism. And so there's these different forms we're going to talk about, but perfectionism really has a very negative effect on all of us. And it can be associated with increased risks for depression and suicide. In socially prescribed perfectionism, individuals believe their social context is excessively demanding, that others judge them harshly, and that they must display perfection to secure approval. So what did I just say? What I'm basically saying is that we expect in social situations that others are going to judge us, and that therefore to be accepted, we have to be perfect. So if you think about public speaking or meeting new people being one of the highest and most difficult things to do for most people, that's a lot of pressure to be in new environments, to not be making mistakes, and be so focused on being judged, we can't even focus on being ourselves. Anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation are only some of the mental health problems that specialists have repeatedly linked with that form of perfectionism, the socially prescribed. One older study, for example, found that over half of the people who died by suicide were described by their loved ones as perfectionists. Another study found that more than 70% of young people who died by suicide were in the habit of creating exceedingly high expectations of themselves. Now, I just want to say that you don't come out of the womb with these expectations. I would say that, yes, some of us have higher drive and greater self-discipline, but we learn this ideal from our caregivers. When you have caregivers who are anywhere from mildly to harshly critical, who tell you what a great job you did, but how much better you could do next time, it can be obviously abusive and emotional and verbal abuse about perfectionistic issues. But it really is a spectrum. And what one person might find to be an issue causing a toxic response to perfectionism, another person might not. So all it may take for me is having a childhood with a very critical mother or father to be a perfectionist, where for you it might take an abusive situation. But regardless, it's not a great component of well-being. So I think good enough is a much better ideal than being a perfectionist. Toxic perfectionism seems to hit young people particularly hard. According to recent estimates, almost 30% of undergraduate students experience symptoms of depression, and perfectionism has been widely associated with those symptoms. And these trends have been rising over the past few decades. And actually a study, I think it was in 2016, of more than 40,000 American, Canadian, and British college students found that in between 1989 and 2016, the proportion of people who exhibited traits of perfectionism rose by 33%. That's a huge amount. And so it's really not serving us. I found a little quote here. It said, self-oriented perfectionism, I know I talk fast sometimes, self-oriented perfectionism, which occurs when individuals attach irrational importance to being perfect, hold unrealistic expectations of themselves, and are punitive in their self-evaluations, are linked with clinical depression symptoms, eating disorders, and premature death among college students and young people. So if I haven't convinced you of how dangerous perfectionism is, it really truly is, I hope that you're hearing me. It is toxic. It is not helpful. We want to push ourselves, but when people say, well, just do your best, okay, that's great, but no one does their best every day either. So I also think that's a standard that we can't live up to. Some days I don't do my best. Some days I'm just trying to get through the day, and I think that's okay. If I'm doing that every day, maybe I'm struggling with something, you know, a lot greater than perfectionism. Maybe I am depressed, but I think we got to cut ourselves some slack and our kids some slack, and that we're all going to mess up sometimes. We're all not going to be our best. We want to look at the whole overall, not the individual minute day by day little moments we have to have to keep ourselves, you know, perfect. It's just a recipe for disaster. Okay. That leads me to the next component of having true love for yourself, which is you got to accept that some people just don't like you. They're never going to like you. They don't like you now. It doesn't matter what you do. You can dance and perform and people please, and they are never going to like you. And you know what? That's okay. Get over it. It's fine. You can live without their approval. You know, you need to be who you are. And for the most part, be a good person, not a perfect person. For the most part, be a kind person. But guess what? It's okay to be mad and not handle things well sometimes. As long as you're not hurting other people, you know, it's okay. None of us are walking around, you know, likable by everyone. It's just not possible. And I think I see this even more in girl culture and young girl culture. There's just this way that, and I think guys do it too, obviously, but there's this sizing up that men do in a different way than women. And it doesn't matter, you know, where you are, where you come from. We all tend to have these ways of judging other people. And sometimes it has nothing to do with that person. Sometimes it's like a person from my childhood I didn't like, and you remind me of them, and I don't really know that. I can't put my finger on it, but I just don't like you. Or you represent things that I don't care for. There's no way to know. There's no detector. So if someone doesn't like you and pretty consistently, you know, doesn't treat you well, move on. Stop trying to win them over. I always say to my kids and my clients, you're not Gandhi, like move on. It's okay. You don't have to, you know, be this holier than thou, take it all person. Just let it go. Move on. Stop trying to get people to like you. They're not going to like you. You know who you are. That goes back to the very first thing I said is getting to know yourself. You know who you are and you know when you mess up and you know when you have good intentions and when you don't. So if you're pretty confident that you don't really have a reason, and even if you do, it's okay. It's life. It's not a big deal. All right. The next one is you might want to consider writing down the things you've done well or writing down your successes. And sometimes you can make maybe a dream board of things you've done or like a dream board of things you want to do. Try to find ways to reinforce what you do well. Because like I said before, we do know that our brains are so wired to focus on our failures. You know, it is that thing where you hear people say, and I think Brene Brown talks about this, you know, your boss gives you an evaluation and he says, here are 20 things that you did well. And here's this one, you know, area for growth. And what do you focus on? The area for growth. Or kids will say, oh, I've got, you know, I got 5 A's and 1 B. And it's like, it's just a B, people. So I think it's really important to focus on what you do well, but not overly focus, but try to remember that you're going to have places where you do well and places where you don't. And if you tend to be a person who goes to the places in your mind where you don't do well, then maybe you need to remind yourself of all the things that you have done, that you have accomplished. And I find that laying in bed at night, this is a good place to do this before you fall asleep. You know, often as we're falling asleep, like when we're waking up, we're kind of going over, rehashing what we have to do or what happened that day. And so often it's focused on the things that we don't feel good about or we wish were different. And that's okay because we need to reflect and be mindful and make shifts. But I think it's also a good time to say, hey, okay, so what did work today? What is going to work? What am I going to make work tomorrow? What can I try harder at? And what do I need to just accept? But try to focus on what's working as much as what's not working. The next one is loving yourself really is about letting yourself be vulnerable. This is a huge one. I know I talk about it all the time. And this is a, you know, classic Brene Brown stuff. But it really is important that letting yourself show up and be seen by other people allows you to deeply connect with other human beings. And it is really important that you are mindful of who you show your vulnerability to. I don't think it's a good idea to just, you know, show up and think that everyone can see that deep, squishy part of you and accept it, because people won't and they can't. But people should earn the right to be with you in your vulnerability. And, you know, you should earn it with them. And so we want to really just, you know, let ourselves be seen by people we trust and we care about. There's no way for us to have a real relationship if it's a one-sided deal where you're showing me who you are, but I really don't show you who I am. So this is that thing where you're telling someone your story and you think you're moving along and your friendship or whatever in your relationship, and you realize that they don't really share that much. They kind of keep it about you, or they don't really share very much. And time has gone on, and it really should be the point where you guys are exchanging, you know, the realness, the real part of your lives. If people don't do that with you, I think that's very telling about their capacity. And it will be very hard for you to have a meaningful and deep relationship with them if they don't. One of my favorite quotes from Brene Brown is this one. Owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. And embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light. So you got to go to the dark to get to the light too, people. It's not just one or the other. We need both. Okay, the next one, if you want to have some true self-love, is really taking care of yourself. And this is the whole, oh, what's your self-care? And I have to say that I struggle with this one a lot because I'm busy a lot and I work and I'm with my kids. And oftentimes it's the first thing I give up. And I have to constantly remind myself that that's not serving me. That, you know, eating well, generally, except for some chocolate here and there, maybe, and a few Skittles occasionally, sleeping and exercising and drinking water, trying to limit our use of alcohol and other substances is really important. It really does affect our mental health and our ability to be positive, to be vulnerable, to in love, you know, to engage in loving ourselves and other people. So if I'm just worn out and have nothing to give because I'm not taking care of myself, you guys know this, right? I can't give it to you. And so I think the years where we're working hard in our career, when we have younger children or really any children often, if you're sacrificing for something you want, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You need to also take care of yourself. And that's an important part of loving yourself because it says, hey, that not only do I matter, my body matters. My well-being matters. So try to find, you know, there's a million different ways to do self-care. And maybe it's 30 minutes. I mean, it doesn't have to be that long, but it is important. The next one is really a huge one too. And this goes back to the boundary issue, but standing up for yourself, I think is so huge. It is such an important way of doing to show that you matter. And I know, you know, growing up in the South and being a girl, I was socialized to be pleasant and be nice and be kind. And I, you know, let's say if I was around people in my family who were extremely assertive and being shy and introverted, as I really truly am at the core, I became uncomfortable with anger. And to me, being angry meant danger. And so I struggled a lot in my younger years to self-advocate. And I still, you know, I still struggle at times because it's not my natural temperament. My natural temperament is to sort of go with the flow. But I'm also a fighter and I know that about myself. And so I used to just keep that part quiet. But I think it's really important that you access the fighter within, you know, learn to stand up for yourself and your own boundaries. Because if you don't do it, no one is going to do it for you. And many people are very happy to take and walk right on over you. And they'll just keep doing it as long as you let them. And so I think if you don't know how, you know, there's assertiveness training classes. There are so many formats nowadays in terms of podcasts and books to learn how to speak up for yourself with respect, but also not to back down. And it can be really hard if you're not really technically wired to be that way. You know, the studies show that those of us who are more agreeable tend to earn less money than those of us who are more assertive and more take charge and more demand. This is why narcissists often do really well in the world because they believe that they deserve more and ask for more oftentimes. And they often get it. It's often why you see very successful people, not always, but often with the traits at least of narcissistic personality disorder, because oftentimes you have to be that way in the world. You have to have a false belief in yourself at times. So I think standing up for yourself, believing in yourself, right? There's also a limit to where you could cross the line. But my guess is that if you tend to be in the agreeable side of the spectrum, that's not your challenge. Your challenge is to learn to self-advocate more and to say, you know what? This is not okay for me. And I am not going to accept X, Y, or Z. It's really important and it's really hard. So if you need help, I would say therapy is a great place, but you can also practice with friends or, you know, like I said, watch podcasts or talks and things like that. It's really important. I think it's important to ask for help when you need it and to speak kindly to yourself. And I think I did a show a while ago on self-compassion, but I think this really is the root of what I've been talking about tonight in terms of self-love. And I know it's been a lot of talking, so we're almost done. But I do really, really believe that self-compassion is something that I don't think most of us cultivate enough because we are so harsh and critical. We have internalized, we call the critical parent sometimes, and we don't know how to talk to ourselves with words of affirmation and words of kindness. When I learned to cultivate this, I learned to do it thinking like, if I was mothering myself, how would I talk to myself? You know, parenting yourself isn't just about taking responsibility. It's also about giving yourself that nurturing that maybe, especially if you didn't get it, but even if you did, learning how to lovingly embrace yourself in a way that fosters a sense of softness and connection to yourself. It is the opposite of harsh and critical judgment. So I'm going to end with this. This is a great self-compassion exercise, okay? So I want you to think of a situation in your life that is difficult and that is causing you stress. So just bring that to your mind and see if you can actually feel the stress and the emotional discomfort in your body. Okay? Now, here's what you're going to do. You're going to say to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a part of life. And as you put your hands over your heart and feel the warm touch of your hand over your heart, and just that warmth that's in your chest, you're going to say, may I be kind to myself. Okay? So this is how it goes. You think of a situation, you say, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a part of life. May I be kind to myself. May I learn to accept myself. May I be strong. May I forgive myself? Something like that, okay? And that's from Kristen Neff's book, N-E-F-F, on self-compassion. And her website is selfcompassion.org. It's amazing. I highly recommend it. She's got great exercises. On that note, I have probably many more I could share with you. I will say that loving yourself is a lifelong journey and a lifelong challenge because we are wired to go down the path of less than. And so look around your life. Look around at the people in your life, who you let in, how they treat you, what you accept, what you don't accept, the way you talk to yourself. And I guarantee you that a lot of us had, many people I do know, had childhoods where they didn't feel like they were enough. And they took that belief system into the world and it's never really left. And so you're going to have to actively do something about it if you want it to be different. You really are. It's not just going to happen. You have to cultivate self-love and self-compassion and healthy relationships and taking care of yourself. So on that note, I'm going to end our show. Thank you for listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage, a clinical psychologist. And this show airs live Monday evenings. I also post it on podcast, usually the next day, at 8 p.m. on Mondays. Don't forget to support our shows this week with all of our local residents taking over our station and our airwaves for the KX Takeover on 93.5. And be good to yourselves. You know, ask yourself tonight, what of all these things can I do? Just pick one thing that you can start to focus on to love yourself more. I'm going to end with a song that I love. It's a Pink song. I know it's not a typical song for the station, but it really talks about, I want to go back to playing Barbies in my room. I want to go back to when life was simple and not so complicated, because it really is complicated and it really is hard. And so you deserve a little love for yourself, because you can't give what you don't have. Thanks so much.
Another day, another sin. Another day, I'm late again. Oh, just like that, my money's spent. Where did it all go? Another night, another heart. Another one leaves in the dark. And I'm searching for my counterpart. Where did they all go? And I playing Barbies in my room. They never say that you gotta grow up quite this soon. How fast things change. But now I'm here and all I wanna do is go back to playing Barbies in my room. And I see it on my father's face, another line that comes with age. I know that time will have its way. Where did it all go? They say that things were simple then, although I don't remember when. I wanna know what happens next. Where do we all go? And I lock every single door, and I look Back to playing Barbies in my room. They never say that you're gonna grow up.